Well, welcome to the Marketect, a live podcast series where leadership and product marketing intersect. The Marketect is brought to you by our friends at the Compete Network. Thank you for all your support, especially Grayson and Adam McQueen, who is honestly as cool and stoic as Steve McQueen. And now you're figuring out, who is Adam McQueen? I got to go meet this guy. Go look him up. My co-host is the one and only Morgan Jam Master Jay. Hello, my friend. How you doing?
Every time. I don't know what's going to happen. All right. Yes, I'm happy to be here. Thank you. Now I'm a Jam Master. Hopefully we have some good tunes today.
Yeah, that's what the J stands for, right? Jam Master in your your middle initial. No?
That's exactly what it is. It's Jam Master. I change it every year just to keep people on their toes.
I love having Morgan here because he keeps us B2B marketers in check with a healthy dose of like just sales perspectives from the front lines. That's never going to work. It's a pipe dream. You know, that's ivory tower thinking. Here is really what sales wants from you marketers. And so I love that perspective. And to that end, I read almost all his LinkedIn posts. And the last one was on, I think last week, you had something on edutainment, which you defined as the education of a concept with an entertaining aspect. And we need more of this in B2B. I was recently on vacation in LA with the family, and we visited the Warner Brothers backstage tour, which is honestly dope. And one of the things that stood out to me was Jack Warner, one of the brothers and one of 14 kids, who happened to be born in Canada. Interesting fact, I did not know that. His motto with Warner Brothers right from the onset was to make pictures that educate, enlighten, and entertain. Educate, enlighten, and entertain. And he believed if his movies didn't do all three, the audience would be disappointed. And frankly, that's no different than B2B. There's tons of people that educate. They're very rational in how they share things. Some entertain, but then at the expense of the education, which means people aren't being enlightened. You got to do all three. And as such, we brought on two people who honestly are the dopest MCs that I've come across in B2B. And I don't mean MC in the traditional sense, like master of ceremony. I mean, they're masters, but they're masters of content. And if you haven't read their LinkedIn posts or newsletters, you're missing out on the basics of how to craft simple yet impactful tech messaging, how to win hearts, minds, and markets with clear communication, how to create memorable content that converts. So without further ado, two of the wickedest MCs in B2B, Emma, always punching above her weight, Stratton, see what I did there? And Devin, I produce cool content that reads the room. Read. See what I did there with the read thing? Anyways, welcome, Emma, Devin.
Yeah, I just have to say I'm super jealous of Devin's last name. Like, it's not fair that you're a writer and your last name is Reed. I just want to put that out there.
I agree that it's an unfair advantage that I will take. And I still wonder, like, did I become a writer because I just wrote the word Reed? Like, yes. You know, I just hear the word Reed your entire life. I don't know. Maybe. But I'll take it.
Yeah.
And thank you, Ron, for the, I feel like I need a record scratch sound effect based on like Jam Master Jay, MC Stratton, MC Reed.
Going crazy.
Yeah. I absolutely love it. I'm getting some Beastie Boy vibes here.
Yeah. Rob, where's the air horn? I think we messed up.
Hip hop, man. It is what it is. I grew up hip hop. This is who I am. But listen, Emma and Devin, both of you have been brave recently in your moves. Emma writing a book, which we were just talking about this before the show began, is no easy feat. It requires bravery because, as you mentioned, there's a lot of inner demons and self-doubt that can creep in when you're putting yourself out there the way you are when you write a book. But I have to say, I read the early copy and it is tip top. So thank you for being brave and doing that. And Devin, you were brave in quitting a full-time job, which is no easy feat, at Clary, and you decided that I'm going to do the reader full-time. So kudos to both of you, frankly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was going to say I was brave for showing up here today. it's a hard act to follow as writing a book, but thanks, Ron.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. We'll start with Emma. Your book, Make It Punchy, it focuses on like stripping away jargon, connecting with humans on a, you know, with buyers on that human level. What's the first step a tech company, especially ones led by engineers, what's that first step they should take to simplifying their message without losing the essence of its product?
Yeah, I think, you know, simplicity is one of those words that has a lot of different meaning. And I think there is a misperception out there, maybe among technical folks, engineers, certain founders, that simple in your messaging means you're going to dumb it down. You're going to make us look basic. You know, people aren't going to get how robust this thing is. You know, we got to show them with all these words and all these ideas. And simplicity is not about dumbing it down to the lowest common denominator and stripping out any kind of uniqueness or technical aspect. Simplicity is about making a message really easily and effortlessly understood by your buyer. Don't make them do a bunch of work and translation, figuring out why they need this thing that you're trying to sell. Do the heavy lifting for them. Make it easy for them to understand why they should give a shit. Excuse me, I said should give a shit about your product. So when it comes to being simple, there's two things. The first is you've got to connect, you got to translate your tech into an outcome, a new possibility, something that your buyer really cares about. So you got to figure out what that is and connect the dots. And then you got to just focus on one thing, like come up with what one problem you solve, that one desire you help them achieve, and really focus on that and go a bit deep on it and really clarify how you help them achieve it, rather than putting like 10 things in, like, oh, we do this and this and this and this and this. So really hone down to this one idea. This is a thing that everyone struggles with. I think this is the hardest part. But if you can do that, then use the simplest words you can to convey that, you know, meaningful outcome, new possibility that you can help a buyer get through your product. So it's twofold. But I think the first thing is like simple doesn't mean dumbed down. My great grandma is going to be pitched this product. We're not selling to great grandmas, you know. Well, maybe, you know, yeah. True, you might be. Maybe I shouldn't. Sorry to all the great grandmas out there, okay?
It could be a great niche market for someone out there.
It's true. It's true. But yeah, that's kind of how I think about simplicity.
I actually have a question when it comes to jargon, because I feel like most people, myself included, because we're in it, we like to make it complex because we want to be different and we don't want to be simple because simple could, we think, would be ignored. So you mentioned a couple of things. What are some best practices for people who, let's say they're messaging right now, they know it's complex or they're making it too complex. What are the steps they could take to make it simple? Is it literally just putting it in a ChatGPT and say, stop making me sound complex? Or this is probably a little bit more elaborate framework than that.
That could be a place to start, putting it in ChatGPT and saying like, please make sense of this. The one thing that I have found, so I train marketers in how to write messaging. I have a bunch of courses for that. And whenever I have a marketer who's like, gives me something that's very complicated and kind of overwrought, and they're like, oh, there's a lot of jargon and I don't know, you know, what's going on here. And I just say to them like, all right, what are you trying to say here? Like, what are you trying to say? And they're like, oh, I'm trying to, and then they just speak this very clear, simple thing that they were trying to convey. And there's something about that act of typing, especially when we're under deadline, just going straight to the keyboard, all that old kind of jargon, all those, the same way that we talk about things just flows. It bypasses the mind, flows straight through the fingertips out onto the screen. If you take a second and think, all right, what am I trying to say? And say it, I'm always like, that, write that. That is so much better than what you just wrote. And I think a lot of marketers say to me, huh, you know, I didn't know that kind of the way I naturally think about this or would say it is good enough for writing or messaging. And I'm like, it is. And that is something I've really noticed this a lot with really smart marketers. And I don't know if that comes from this feeling of I'm not a writer, you know, or, you know, there's a lot of pressure that I'm feeling when I'm writing this messaging. But taking a pause and just being like, what are you trying to say? What's the single most important takeaway here? Ask yourself that. Take a pause. Take a breath. It will clarify, and often what you've thought of is going to be better than kind of what you were, you know, typing and retyping and deleting and adding commas and all that, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry. Again, this is like the perfect segue to simple messaging to build trust. I mean, I didn't see a company do it better than a few years ago when Devin, when you were at Gong, you guys, the language you used was, it was beautifully simple. And so Emma just talks about, you know, leading with simple messaging. How have you seen simplified, straightforward messaging help build trust during your time at Gong?
Yeah, I thought you called me beautiful and simple for a second, which I'll take
both.
No, it's funny.
I wasn't and just I, talking I about the messaging. It was aimed at both messaging and you. Yes,
I'll take it. I like what Emma said a lot because that's what I coached my team to do is look away from the screen. And what are you trying to say? Don't try to write. Just what are you thinking? I think a lot of writing advice is like, you know, write like you talk. I say write like you think. It's even less filtered. Give me the real deal. And that's what we were doing at Gong, which was like, well, look, we know who our audience is and we know they have a very strong BS meter. So we're selling to salespeople. You have to come across as good or as a better salesperson than them immediately to earn their trust. And salespeople don't really trust marketers too much because they have scar tissue from their internal teams and they see a lot of poor marketing in B2B externally, right? And so they have a very high guard. So what we wanted to do was basically use the simplest street level language. Street level was the phrase that we used all the time. So it's like, you know, and I love to say this because Rowan's a product marketer at heart is like, I love product marketers, but they give me like this positioning doc or what they think is like a messaging doc. And it's like full of jargon and things like engineers and the CEO said, because they hang out with other B2B CEOs. And I said, this is awesome. No one talks like this though. So I'm not publishing anything like this. And so let's have a conversation around your positioning, because when you start to talk about stuff, you start to get that street level. Like, just talk to me, like walk and talk. I'll take people out to go get coffee just to hear that kind of unfiltered, you know, unpolished version. And then you can take that to your content. And that starts to really catch momentum once you start trusting yourself. We don't have to be the smartest in the room. We have to be the most relatable in the room, because that's how you win people over. Then you can add a little bit of polish, you know, okay, we're talking to executives today. Let's button it up a little bit, right? Maybe I do my hair instead of wearing a backwards hat if I'm talking to CROs today, right? But for the most part is you want your audience to see themselves in your content, in your stories, in your word choice, because they're going to identify with that. They're going to identify with the challenges, the problems, and then they're going to trust you because you're the one who delivered it to them.
Beautiful. And you said, at Gong, your audience was sales, so you had to relate to them in the language tone that they use. If your audience, this is Emma and Devin, just to build off that, if your audience was a chief information security officer, you know, like a security engineer, very technical, also no nonsense, they don't want fluff. It's still simple messaging, right? It's still simple language, but there are technical nuances to that.
I mean, I really like Devin. We're totally on the same page. I love kind of taking customer language, talking like they talk, helping them see themselves, you know, in the writing. And I think CIO, it's no different. You know, like you said, yeah, maybe there's you shift what you're talking about, but it's the same idea. So as a messaging consultant working with different tech companies, I've run calls with buyers, like over 1,000 buyers over the past, you know, few years on the phone, deeply technical, lots of CIOs, CTOs, because I, you know, I work for a lot of technical companies. And yes, they have their technical language, but they have their street talk too. So one company I worked with, and the story's in the book, well, I'm not sure if it got into the language, but I interviewed a bunch of this like security folks, and everyone talked about how they retired their old solution, like they felt like they had to babysit it or they had to handhold it. And like everyone was using that same language. I'm like, huh, this is so funny. Everyone's saying that they feel like they have to babysit their clunky old legacy solution. And so we use that in the messaging. A bunch of people are bitching and moaning about not having their nights and weekends anymore because of alerts and things going wrong. We put it in, you know, the main messaging. And that's how they were talking about their problems. That's how they were describing it. And, you know, when you can go to your client and say, this is actually how your customers are framing their problem and the goal they want to achieve, then people get less scared about doing it because, of course, it's different than what other companies are doing, which is the same old copy, you know, copycat and getting all technical. But that, that is how you stand out. I think when we think about differentiation, sorry, I'm jumping topics a little bit, but
differentiation.
Yeah. Differentiation has always been hard, gets harder every day. And everyone always asks me, well, how do we differentiate in our messaging? And let's be honest, who has real technical differentiation anymore? I don't know. Does someone have it? Like it's always something like this tiny little thing that everyone's going to catch up to in 3 months. Like it's very hard to find like meaningful, this is the differentiation in the product. And I always say to people, forget about that. Focus on kind of what Devin's saying, who can get closest to how the customer thinks, feels, talks, who can prove the most that you don't just get your customer, you're kind of one of them. That is where you should put your energy, not like, oh, I want to differentiate my headline and stand out, because that's just not how you do it anymore. I don't think it's possible. So it kind of, so much stems, that idea of street level talk isn't just like, oh, cool idea. I think it is how you can differentiate, how you can, yes, build trust before people are ready to get on the phone with you. So many good things.
I love that we're talking about street talk today. I love this is not what I thought. I did not thought we were going to go to the streets.
You get a couple
today,
of MCs on a call. We're going to talk.
Hey, look, I'm going to the streets. I didn't know we were going to the streets today. I'm pretty pumped about it, to be fair. So I'm like, yeah, great. Let's keep it going, you know? I'm not
so
mad at
Emma,
it.
This one is for you, and then we'll shift to Devin. But I'm assuming most of the tech companies that you deal with, they're so proud because they're quite often they're engineering-led founders. They're so proud of how the tech works that they want to talk about how their tech works and it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, more so than solving, you know, like talking about how it solves very specific problems. How do you coach them and how can you coach our audience into shifting this focus from like how the tech works versus how it solves problems and concentrating on the problem that allows you to relate to the buyer that much better?
Yeah, I know. It's a hard one. And hopefully this founder is open to the idea and not like completely resistant or insisting to talk about it in one way. But I always say, you know, messaging is not supposed to be about the product, right? It's supposed to be about the cool new things your customer can be, do, or feel thanks to your product. So it's like, we'll get to your product, but we need to help people.
Sorry, Emma, that's worth repeating. It's say that line again. It's not about
your product. It's about the cool new things your customer can be, do, or feel thanks to your product. Don't worry,
beautiful.
It's in the book.
You have to get the book in order to get the quote, bro. Come on.
I'm not going to say it again. You got to buy the book. If you ever want to hear that again.
Come on.
Oh, you drop that Amazon link in the comments. Right here.
That affiliate.
And if someone's, I have a bunch of kind of analogies in the book, one where I talk about a blender, right? And I show how silly it is to just talk about commercial grade blades for about a blender, you know, in the first breath. It's like, no one, that's not going to make the random consumer want to buy this super expensive blender, right? So I talk about how it can make, you know, vitamin packed smoothies, whatever. So if someone really doesn't get it, you can.
But Emma,
kind of,
what if that blade was made from a samurai sword? Then we're talking about the blade? No, I'm kidding. No.
You know, maybe, you know, but yeah, so it's about the cool new things your customers can be able to be, do, or feel. So then it's like, okay, let's start talking about those things. What can they do that's different? Let's get concrete. And it can be great to ask customers, hey, you know, what was life like before and after you had this product? You know, what did that routine look like before? How did it change? What did it look like now? That's one of my favorite questions to ask, because the customer will give you super concrete examples like, oh, well, before we were running around, we could never find a file and we were missing deadlines. And after, oh, it was all in one place and we could just push a button, it was taken care of, whatever. But those concrete examples of what you can be, do, or feel, like as Devin said, people want to be able to see themselves in the message. So if they're like, ah, that was me last week. I couldn't find a file and I was running around and I missed a deadline. And then in their mind, they're like, oh my God, remember that? That really sucked. And then they're getting an emotional response as well, which is kind of fanning the flames a little bit around a little bit of motivation to perhaps do something about this issue that maybe they were like, nah, this is just how it is. But now there's a bit of emotion. they've connected with this problem and they're like, well, this company seems to kind of know what's up. So let me keep reading. Let me take the next step. Let me, you know, and hopefully potentially, you know, buy the product, right?
Yeah. I think something that you're saying here on the customers, I hope that everybody listens in. You're absolutely right on the tech, right? There's very small nuances in there, but it's really more about the customer experiences rather than the widgets. And the more that you can get close with the customer is absolutely key. So I want to highlight that what you're saying there as well, because that's probably one of the most important things we're talking about today. But I know we got to pivot over to Devin, Rowan, but
There's a one-liner right there. There's one liner. So Jonathan Costa, I don't know if he's watching this. He's my hire at Gong. He had this line. He said, closest to the customer wins. And that has been like etched into my brain ever since then. And customers are the best copywriters sometimes, to Emma's point. Like, you can steal from a call recording and someone says the babysit. We heard one too for Clary, because the same thing. I think like surface level is like, it saves you time. It's like, everything kind of does, because no one's going to market saying you'll love the product even though it adds 4 hours to your day, right? Like, no one's saying that. We heard people saying, it's like, where specifically is it? Are you losing time? Is there a losing Sundays? So Sundays they're updating their, you know, spreadsheets or whatever, but what are they doing instead? Is they're not working out, hanging out with their kids, or doing the, like, the whole reason they're working, all that free time is supposed to be for Sunday to do that thing, and that's what they're missing out on. So it was like, stop spending your Sundays in spreadsheets. Like, that hits a more specific moment in their day and their week. And they go, oh, there's another way. To your point, it's not the way it is. There's a change. There's a change that can be introduced.
Let's build off that.
So pressing spreadsheets on a Sunday.
That didn't sound good at all.
Shockingly common. To me, I'm going to open my laptop, let alone Excel. But they're like, no, that's like Sunday mornings and Sunday nights are like in Excel. And I was like, that sounds awful.
Monday blues, like Sunday blues.
That's not it.
Hey, man, I'll take spreadsheets on a Sunday versus Sunday at Costco with my three kids.
Hey,
having a cart jammed into my heel.
What?
So,
no. Wait, whoa. That's, bro. I didn't know it was like Mad Max at Costco now. Jeez.
I'm to Costco with me and my family. We will show you how to conquer Costco, because there's no better way to spend 14 hours on a Sunday than at a Costco.
So again, closest to the customer wins. I love that quote. Let's build off that. Devin, how Gong, Clary, your clients, how do you identify the problems your audience faces and then craft like a content strategy that not only addresses those problems, but also, you know, draws them into their brand? So how are you identifying the problems and getting closer to those problems? Like, what are you doing to do that?
So, I mean, it's fairly manual, because going back kind of, Emma, to, I think the problem you're probably solving or starting with is like, a lot of marketers, when the messaging is very flat or it's not specific, like, we help you save time, or we give, you know, we 10X this. I go, okay, great. That kind of shows me you don't actually know exactly what you're talking about. You don't have mastery over this topic because you're unable to speak to it at a very specific level. And that's not a knock on the marketers, right? It's like, you have to be a market expert, so you should know your audience, and you have to be a product expert, so you actually know what it is you're selling. And ideally, you're a messaging or writing expert, so you can connect those things. That's a lot of expertise to be great at, right? And try to master, but like, that's the truth, and that's what you need to do. Some of the, I would say, fair shortcuts are like listening to call recordings with your sales teams. Like, that's just the best way, is to go straight to the customers. And I've also shared this like 10-point checklist. It's like 10 questions. And the whole purpose is to go deeper into like, not just challenges and benefits. Like, that's great. We all want more money, more time, less of the opposites of those things. But it's like, what, like, how have they been burned in the past? What does previous buying experiences look like? What are the things, like, going specific? What are their like personal desires beyond just getting promoted? And basically, you can go through this thing, and you can use ChatGPT to get a starting point. You can use those sales calls. You know, there's other ways to answer it. But once you get to that like truly in-depth area, now you can start to tie the transformation from save time to, you know, you know stop wasting time and buy Clary, to stop spending spreadsheets, you know, your Sundays and spreadsheets, and use Clary. So you have to get to that like intimate level of knowledge. And the only way to frame it is like, don't know your audience, become them. Go spend time where they spend time. Truly be a market expert and understand their world, the language they use, you know, like I said, what trends are they paying attention to? What trends are they ignoring? Right. And then you can start to say, okay, great. Let's craft some messaging that's actually going to hit bullseye versus like the edge of the dartboard.
And it is
brilliant. I love that
piece around that piece you just said, Devin, around like know your customer, you know, just hang out with them. The companies that I've worked with who have been like that, who just love their customers, know them, maybe the founder used to be one of them, or
yeah,
the messaging, it's like, it's natural. It's not as much of an issue. I don't know, because it's just like, I don't know, we're just writing what, like, if you know them, it takes so much more of the pain out of writing messaging and content, basically. Like, you skip a lot of kind of the heartache and the market research and the self-doubt and all that if you just get to know them as people really well. Like, hanging out a couple times would probably give you a lot more than hours and hours spent with ChatGPT and on the internet and reading Gartner reports and all that stuff. Yeah,
forget AI.
That's
we're done with you.
Yeah. It's like the game of telephone, right? It's like, go find out go spend time with who you're trying to learn about instead of like asking people if I'm like, what's Morgan like? You're going to get some directionally correct answers, but I'm going to get Rowan's version versus what Emma likes versus if you just hang out with Morgan for an hour, you're like, oh yeah, I got a good vibe for the guy. Like, I figured him out a little bit more, right? Than just like, that would be a fun exercise. Like, try to market to Morgan without ever meeting him and then do it after meeting him for an hour. And I guarantee the results would be much better.
That would be a very interesting experiment, actually.
It would. Yeah.
What are you going to market to him, though? Like, what are you going to try and sell him?
First thought, better streaming than Twitch. I would say a half.
I never said where I streamed. You assumed.
Of course I do. Purple background. Twitch is purple. Picking up on cues.
No, brand colors is purple. But YouTube's better streamed. Anyways, continue.
But the other thing too, though, is the key is having that internal subject matter expert, but like the internal like persona expert, right? So like, I'm sure Emma, you have it too. When your founder was the accountant that was struggling and then they turned around and made the accounting software, like they can put quick heat checks on your copy and on your messaging and just say like, no one talks like that, but here's what we say instead and in this way. And so it's like that right there, I think, is the difference between good and great for marketing teams, is having someone who can give you an honest heat check, whether you're selling to salespeople, accountants, whatever.
Building on that, Devin, it's like this idea, and I think a lot of marketers are doing this right now, and it's not their fault. A lot don't have access to customers or feel they don't, or they're kind of siloed. And when you're writing for an abstract person, a persona, a Morgan J. Ingram that you've never met, but it's an abstract person. And writing to appeal to an abstract non-person is very hard. Right? It's very hard. But writing for like a friend or someone you know is easy because you're like, well, I know them. Oh, I'd never say that to them. They laugh at me, right? And it's like this, write for a human, like write for an actual human, write for someone you know. And that makes it easier. So if you don't have that knowledge and they are your buyer's an abstract persona or just a list of traits on a worksheet, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be an unpleasant experience trying to write messaging for them. So just another plug to meet them and make them real people in your mind.
Yeah. And then that lends itself to the natural messaging that you talked about before, Emma, right? So a lot of, I'll admit, a lot of product marketers, we do a lot of the research that that Devin talked about, whether listening to, you know, sales calls, going on calls with sales, talking to analysts about the buyers that they're talking to that are your buyers. We're getting it from all different angles. But the one part that I think us as B2B folks miss a lot on is that emotional resonance. We feel like we have to be so rational because it's such a high impact purchase that this individual is going to get, that we're almost scared of us being emotional and in our connection with them. And you can't have that emotional resonance with your audience if you don't know them intimately well. Such as, you know, if Devin wants to sell into Morgan, go spend an hour with the guy. And that will be, I promise you, an hour well spent, believe me. But Emma, how are you advising tech companies to incorporate these emotional triggers into their messaging without sounding insincere?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about it in terms of realness. So the thing that I kind of preach about is like, there is no realness in B2B. Very little realness. And I think it starts from this place of like, we all want to sound professional and intelligent, curious, and we use big words. And, you know, I don't know if it started with how we learned how to write in school. But in B2B, everyone writes like super serious. I mean, think about typical B2B content. It's like, ugh, who wants to read that? Like long, you know, paragraphs, long words. And it's not real. So I have this story that I tell that kind of where I first learned about the power of real messaging. And it was kind of when I graduated college. I was an English major. Devin, were you an English major?
I was.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, I love this. All right,
Devin. You didn't sound excited about that, Devin.
They automatically sent me there. I didn't get to choose. They're like, read.
What's your last name?
Literature major. First pick on all the lit classes.
Yeah. Okay, English major's rule. But, you know, everyone says you'll never get a job. You won't make any money. It's a useless degree. And so that's what happened to me out of college. I was living in New York. I was living in Brooklyn. I was a publishing assistant. I was making like $20,000 a year. I was broke. And back then, I was terrified of checking to see how much money I had in my bank account because it would be like depressing, be like $5 or be like negative. So I was just like, it's better just not to look. And I just ignored the issue. And I was like this sad bohemian English major. And then a couple years later, I see this headline from an online bank. And it was, take the fear out of checking your account balance. And I was like, oh my God, I'd never told anyone that was a thing. I'd never spoken it. I'm like, who is this company that knows me? So I start reading kind of like the messaging, and they even made a little joke. They're like, we're looking at you, English majors. And I was like, oh my God, this is my bank. And I joined and I became like a loyal obsessed. And they had the best copy. Like they were just the best. They eventually, you know, exited and are no around no more. But it all started me becoming a customer from that headline, which spoke to this thing that I hadn't really even articulated to myself. But if they had gone the typical B2B route, it would have been like, drive success in your personal finances.
Yeah, and you're I would not
have stopped. I would not have even read it, right? So getting real, it's like street talk. It's like, okay, can we get real? Like, how do we actually describe this problem? So I was training a team. They were a customer data platform, and I was doing messaging training with them. And so, you know, their messaging was starting with that really like, you know, super serious stuff. They were like, the pain point that our, you know, chief of customer experience has is they need to drive alignment among departments. And I'm like, ugh, okay, how would they really talk about that? Like if they're talking, complaining about their problems to appear, you know, at a barbecue, how would they actually talk about this issue of needing to align departments? And they're like, well, they'd probably be annoyed because every department has their own data, siloed. They're not talking. So everyone's chasing their own different metric. They don't come together and add up, and we're not able to make, you know, good decisions about customer experience. It's a nightmare. I just wish they would all do the same thing. And so we worked on a headline where it was like, finally get everyone chasing the same metric. So it doesn't have to be like crazy, you know, poke into their soul, tell them, you know, get sappy. When we say emotion, it's don't make them cry. It's just like, can you be real about the problem? Maybe a bit of humor. Can you, relatable, like Devin said, can you make it relatable? So that's kind of my favorite thing with emotion. It's not so much like, oh, make them cry or give them chills. But can you talk about it in a real way, the way they're thinking about it? And can you kind of touch on that deeper reason why, like, I'm stuck in spreadsheets on a Sunday night, for example?
Not the move for anyone. I actually want to call something out, a question from the audience, because we're talking about street talk. I think this is a good question that complements this. How do you reconcile simple tech messaging with SEO, the search terms the prospects use to find for your services or product? And essentially, in my experience, the way they talk and what they're searching for differ.
I always get the SEO question. I can't stand it.
Here it is.
Always. I'm like, SEO, because so I am very stubborn and willful. And I've been like SEO from the beginning, like for in terms of messaging, because I believe that if you, you know, focus, connect on what really matters, use, you know, speak like they do, make it simple, it's going to be what you need. And that has always been the case. Like the results have always worked for me. And I've spoken to other SEO experts who are like, you shouldn't be crafting your messaging for the keywords, right? Devin, you probably have a better answer. I'm like a renegade when it comes to that. You probably have a better answer.
So for my, I have the same question I would start every single hiring interview with. So if I'm hiring someone for my team, I would say an intentionally broad question, which is, what is your approach to content marketing? Just to see where people go. And if you say keywords on that first sentence, the interview is over.
It's over.
I'm not lying.
Immediately move from the call? Eject?
I'm mentally unsubscribed and I do two more questions. I do two more questions to make it nice. And then I say, do you have any questions for me? And I'm out of there in 15 minutes. Because here's why. That's not how people buy. Yes, you buy when you're ready to buy a productivity tool. Yes, you're ready. And you should 100% use the most clear, descriptive call recording software or whatever that thing is. But I think it was the B2B Institute lately that said like the 95-5 rule, which that's a little bit of a round number for me to trust, but I will run with it. 95% of people are not in market. 5% are in market. So for the 5% that are hitting Google saying, yes, I'm looking for this specific thing. Yeah, you need to use that specific phrasing so you get the search, right? Like that's pretty straightforward. But for the 95%, which is basically everything else we've been talking about, you need to do what we've been talking about, which is like not say, hey, do you need a better productivity tool or productivity suite? Like no one has that thought in their head. The thoughts that we have in our head is, man, I wish I had more time with my kids, or damn, I wish I knew how to do that thing for my boss, or man, I wish I wasn't so afraid of checking my bank account. Like those are the emotional hooks that are actually going to get you noticed in the other channels that is not search.
But I think what I'm sensing, though, because this question always comes up, I feel like internally at a lot of companies, SEO has, you have to, you know, SEO is being put upon the messaging, content. Like SEO is a department that often like comes in and makes changes. That's the sense that I get in a lot of times where it's like kind of siloed and then SEO comes in and you're forced to make all these changes. And I think that's why the question comes up a lot. I don't know. Do you have any experience with that? I mean, obviously, Devin, you wouldn't stand for that. Yeah. But like,
well, that's because SEO, the whole concept is designed for an algorithm and everything else we're talking about is designed for humans.
Yeah, right.
So when you're playing the race to the bottom, which is let's crank out as many, you know, many pieces of content with this specific keyword and the headers and the subheaders and this amount of links, like you've lost me because that's just not how like people think. That's how people work. So what happens a lot of times is they go, hey, let's just use AI, bang out all these blogs, put them on the website. And I say, congrats, you're on your way to putting out a ton of, bad first impressions at scale. People are going to hit your website. You know, congrats, you got your click. They hit your website. Maybe these days, maybe at best, if they hit your website, they find the answer and they bounce. And so a lot of times people bring me in, hey, can we look at our SEO? It's not performing. Look at the numbers. Nothing's converting. Not like genuinely zero conversions. And then you go look at the blog and you go, would you even read past paragraph two? Your conversion point is that is below the fold, but you're, you know what I mean? You're like giving boring mechanical content, getting your web traffic numbers, and then being surprised that like the hundreds of thousands of dollars you're investing in SEO isn't resulting in pipeline. It's like, cause it doesn't work. The only way I would really look at it is like the bottom of the funnel. Again, high intent. I'm looking for a tool, you know, Gong versus Clary type searches. Of course you need to have the right landing pages, but your messaging can still shine there. Like that's still where you say, hey, it's not the way it is. Here's a new way. And then you get your conversion, right? I think that's too much focus on the click and not enough on the convert.
On that note, too much focus on the click, not enough on the, and not even the conversion, I'll say on the storytelling. Like Devin, I've had my son who's going to grade 11 read some of your posts, all three of you, honestly, because he wants to get into the space already. Just because he sees what we do here. You successfully turn readers into like raving fans. So how are you using storytelling, like the art of storytelling to create that like emotional connection, whether it's on your LinkedIn posts, whether it's on your videos, like how are you using the power of story to create that emotional connection?
Well, it starts with emotion, to be honest. Like that's what I'm starting with, is what emotion was I feeling and that I think my audience is feeling at the same time, right? So I'm a dad of two. I don't talk about that too much because those emotions are not, in those scenarios, are not going to be as broadly relatable to, you know, dozens of thousands of marketers and salespeople, right? But what I know they are familiar with is when I'm sitting here like struggling to come up with an idea and I go for a walk and that doesn't work. And I call Morgan to pitch the idea, and he's like, I don't know, that ain't it, but you can keep working on it. And then you like, you look at, go to LinkedIn, and you're like, damn, it seems like everyone has their time. Like, how come everyone else is doing it and I'm struggling? Like, what the hell? That's your moment. That's where you should feel, where you're feeling something. Doesn't have to be negative. It can be positive. But I like the problems and the negative, you know, emotions, because those lead to solutions. That's what I want to focus on. And so instead of like how-to content, I try to do the how-I content. Here's how, what I was doing. Here's what I was struggling with. I was seeing, thinking, doing it one way. Man, it sucked. And then I talked to Emma. I read this book. Holy hell. Here's three things I'm doing differently. And here's some results I got. Or I'm just, maybe I don't even have the results yet. I just don't feel stuck anymore. That's enough too. And so what I'm just trying to do is focus on the emotions. And then I'm constantly in my head thinking about the reader, no pun intended, which is like, how are they going to perceive this information? Are they going to be confused? Are they going to think, oh, that's fake? Like, I'm trying to like BS monitor every line of that story. And then you can tighten it up to make it as concise as possible. Because another thing people say is like, oh, maybe this failed because the post was too long or the video was too long. I'm like, The Godfather and Bollywood movies are like 3 hours long, and they're the best, most popular movies on the planet. So don't tell me it's too long. Tell me that it's boring, because that's the truth. It drags on too much. So that's when you can go in there, cut some scenes, so to speak, get it as potent as possible, get your pace up, because great stories have great pace, and then you cut it, leaving people wanting more. So it's not too exhaustive either. You know, you want people to like hit like, or be like, oh my God, that was amazing. Can't wait for the next thing Emma come, you know, drops.
And speaking of cutting, like Emma, your book is helping us tech marketers cut through the noise. Now more so than ever, so many categories are mature, crowded. How are you recommending to your clients, tech companies, to message, to stand out without overwhelming their audience with and this and this and this and this and this and say all these things, and then, you know, a light bulb will go off? How are you helping? And this ties into Devin, just, you know, the discipline of using emotional resonance, having that BS meter always on. But like, how are you helping them in a disciplined way cut through the noise with that messaging output that you give them?
I mean, my advice is always unpopular and no one wants to take it, because it's always go narrow with your message. So go narrow. You know, pick a, you know, find, I call in the book your A-plus customer. So it's like, you know, who are your best customer, the people who love it, who get it, who you want more of, and speaking to them. Yes, I know, but we want to sell to everyone. Oh, but there's 100 people in the buying group. You know, it's like, and this is the B2B problem, and people get stuck, and that's how they go bland. They're like, I got to speak to everyone. And so when I tell people, no, choose, you don't need to exclude, you're not going to alienate people, but you need to focus on, you know, this group, these people that have this type of mindset, that are have this amount of awareness of the problem, who are like this, and you can expand from there. And it scares people, quite frankly. It scares them because it seems at odds with aggressive growth goals. And so I think startups, early stage startups, have that advantage. It's like the startup advantage is like you're taking on the big incumbents and you can really nail that narrow messaging so that people are like, oh my God, this is the solution for us. They're talking, right? They're street level. They get me. I can see my problems in them. But I meet a lot of startups who are like, I want to do what Salesforce is doing. Like, I'm going to set up my website like Intercoms. I'm like, no, they have a different problem that you don't have right now, which is we can go narrow because we're too big. So even if it's like, yes, we sell to lots of different types, but can you narrow in on like, what's the mindset of the person we're trying to reach? Like, what's the vibe? You know, what's the shared goal? What's the shared problem? Can we focus our message, our positioning, our story around something that I can understand and repeat and put out in the market again and again? That is going to be memorable. So it's scary to do though. So a lot of people are like, yeah, and they're quite frankly a bit scared. And I get it, because there's a lot of pressure. But then they'll see that other startup who did it, you know? So, for example, I remember I worked with a startup and I was trying to get them to do this, basically. And they had a product that basically analyzed data from the past, the present, and the future, right? It had those like three elements. I did interviews, like, they only care about the present real-time shit. I'm like, just focus on the real-time. That is what people want. they wouldn't do it. They're like, nope, got to do the full cycle, like all the things. And this competitor did it, and they're flying way ahead of them. And then a year later, like, they're a leader in the space. Everyone's like wanting to be like them. And I'm like, I told you that this is exactly what I told you to do. But they were scared because they're like, but if we just talk about one aspect of our product, they won't know we have all this other stuff. So fear drives a lot of human decisions, a lot of marketing ones, a lot of messaging ones, and content SEO ones. That fear of like, oh no. And I say, don't be scared. You know, you can have faith in what you know that your product can do for people. You can have faith and like, yes, this is what they love. And just focus on that and put it out there 6 months and see how it goes. And then if it's terrible, you can switch again. But that, I believe, is what companies need to do to stand out. But I acknowledge that it's scary and a lot of people don't want to do it.
That sounds like that's more of a gut thing that you need to decide on where you need to narrow your focus. Because I think probably people have that question of like, so how do I know? Like, I want to do this, I want to do that, you know, shiny object syndrome. But I think we've all been there. Like, I can do 1,000 things. I've gone through this process myself. But yeah, I think it's more of like, what's your gut telling you? Or data, but maybe both.
No. Gut. Because when we're stuck in our heads, we don't hear our gut because we're too up here. So meditation, right? Quiet and going out for a walk, those quiet moments doing the dishes, the shower, when suddenly you're like, wait, it's that. Like, duh, it's that. And again, a hard thing to get people to do, but when you're stuck in your head, you're overanalyzing and you're in that loop. But when you can kind of get some, you know, have that, you can hear your gut and it's like, it's that, right? Because the times when I have honed it down to something and they've gone forward with it, teams have been like, of course it's that. That's kind of why we started the company. Or like, they're always like, of course, like, that's so obvious. It's like, well, yeah, it's because it is. It's the core of who you are as a company and why you built this and why you're here in some cases. So it's often something like, you knew this all along. You just need to kind of pare away all that other stuff you're layering on top of it and just let this thing shine so you can be known and associated with something in the market.
Cut through the noise by having a message that is narrow for your A-plus customers. Love it. Two final questions. I know we're almost up at time. One is for Devin. The second one is for both of you. Devin, you built, I'll say, best-in-class content engines at Gong and then Clary. What advice do you have? Let's say the messaging is in place now. What advice do you have for tech companies looking to develop a content strategy that attracts and converts with quality pipe rather than let's just go get all the pipe that's out there?
Yeah, I'd say the first thing is probably like get your point of view written down. And the messaging, you could argue, is like kind of part of your point of view. Hopefully your point of view is already done if you have messaging, but you'd be surprised how many marketing teams still don't have like what's their point of view. And so that is basically like, what do you believe? Like, what do you see in the world that's broken and you're solving it in a unique way? And that's kind of it. Like, you know, you had a problem, you know, it's usually your CEO. So had a problem, saw the problem, fixed the problem, because I believe the world should be a better place, whatever your belief, you know, I believe is right. And so it's like, get that down first, because if everyone on your marketing team doesn't know what you believe as a company, you're going to start to get really disjointed and inconsistent messaging, especially if you're in especially if you have a large marketing team, and especially if you have multiple channels that you're using. So I'd say that's like the first thing. And then the second, let's say you have that, is pick one channel to dominate on. I'm talking like, if you're doing digital events, put the best damn digital events for that market. You know, if you're doing LinkedIn, put the best damn LinkedIn content, the most, you know, best and different. And like, get one channel humming before you're just like, cool, let's go on X and let's start to do this and start to do that. It's like, you're not really great at anything yet. So why are you trying to be great everywhere? You're probably going to be mediocre everywhere, which is the honest assessment that most CMOs give me, is like, nothing's really working. So it's like, cool, let's go back to the basics. What is your message? What is your narrative? And then look at your strengths and look at where your audience is. If they're on Twitter and you're not on Twitter, you got to learn. Just got to go figure out Twitter. If they're on LinkedIn and you don't have a channel expert, that's why I ask, like, who's the channel expert here learning like what's trending and who's doing what? You can't expect to be successful. You have to have, you know, you got to know where to go get that attention.
Beautiful. Final question. Both of you. The one key insight or takeaway for B2B messaging or content strategy that you'd like to share? Emma, we'll start with you.
I mean, I'm loving the street level thing. I never use that phrase. It's like,
oh, I'm literally using it in every piece of content move for us. All right, from the street.
So I kind of talk about like, well, say like you would at a barbecue, or what are you trying to say, right? What are you trying to say? Say like you would at the barbecue, right? That those prompts, how can you be more real? You know, how can you just get closer to the real problem, the real way people feel? Keep it real. That's my takeaway. Keep it real.
Keep it real. Love it. And there is someone who used the word street, by the way, another good friend. Ooh. For street, for something as complex as pricing and packaging. Oh. Street pricing, Marco Rivera.
Pricing.
Every chapter in this book, and this is the easiest way to learn about pricing and packaging in B2B. I know this is not meant to be a plug for B2B, but
no,
you talk about street. Every chapter is the name of a hip hop song.
I'm kind of on board with that.
Honestly, that's
crazy.
title and cover right there. I'm kind of mad I didn't come up with that. Free content coming in fall. I would say mine is like, I tell this to folks, is like, no one gives a shit about your product yet. So what you need to realize is you're either playing, winning, or dominating in the attention economy in your market. And you need to have a strategy to gain attention, earn it, and then convert it into a follower, a subscriber, a something. And it's probably not a client. Like, just to be clear, you're probably not going to write one post that gets someone to be like, oh my God, there is a problem and I actually do want the solution. And this is the best solution. Pound the demo button and buys that month. Like, that's just unrealistic. So just have a plan to earn attention wherever it is you're playing, and then make sure that your content is different and high quality and resonates emotionally. And you'll start to grow your audience. That'll grow your trust. And then I'll start to grow your pipeline.
Beautiful. Morgan, from that sales perspective, you came from the sales side, you're surrounded by sales folks and marketing people nowadays, but what is your one piece of advice with that sales lens for marketers as it relates to messaging and content?
This is something I've started to do for my own self, for messaging and what we're building. And then also what I saw to be really successful when, as I've worked with people on sales development, things of that nature, is take the time at the end of the week. We talked about sales calls, and I do it as a voice note. You could write it, whatever. And just talk about like what happened that week. Like, what were people complaining about? What were people upset about? What were objections that like really frustrated you? Because ultimately, actually, for sales calls is where the greatest content is, because you're talking to customers about their problems on a day-to-day basis and potentially looking to solve, but not everyone's problem you could solve, right? And so if you take the time to actually voice out, what were the objections? Like, what were people upset about? Why did that person move forward? Like, what were some things that they said that were top of mind? It actually allows you to get more clear on how you're speaking to the buyer, because then it's their language, right? This is a very, very small detail, but because I've trained a lot in Europe for all things pipeline generation, whatever, I always remind myself that it's process instead of process. And that if you say, you don't say college, you say uni. These are very small details, yet when you say that, they're massively impressed. So it's just the same thing here, is that like, if you could take these little small details that your customers give you from the sales perspective, you're actually going to stand out more just across the board. Because when we go sell to Europe, I always say uni. They're like, oh, I didn't know that you knew. I was like, yeah, I know what that means. So it's just good things to know.
Brilliant. Thank you all for your time. For me, you guys are 3 MCs, masters of content. Appreciate you sharing all your insights. Good luck, Emma, with the book launch. September 18th is when dropping.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Devin, your newsletter, your videos, your LinkedIn posts, tune in, folks, if you want to learn more. And then the same for my good friend, Morgan Ingram. Again, he brings out sales angles to what marketers need to be thinking about. Appreciate you all. You're always very generous with me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.